study the passage before us, this very singular verse, God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth. You know, very interesting, I had the privilege in South Africa to go to a nuclear power plant. And within the reactor, it was like this huge pit, this well. There was water in, and inside was the nuclear reactor. And you know, the water had this glow. There was no lights, but it glowed. It was blue, this bright blue glow. And they told us that it's called the Cherenkov effect. The Cherenkov effect. And I tried to read this up, and I did it about five times, and I'm going to just give it to you in baby terms. The reason for that Cherenkov glow is that the radioactively charged particles move through the water faster than the speed of light. I'm trying to figure that out. But you know, if you take a bucket of that water and you go put it somewhere else, guess what? There's no glow. And I thought, that is worship. If we far from God, there can be no worship. The moment we come in the presence of God, we start glowing and we get charged and we worship. You see, people have various experiences which they call worship. In the course of life, we often go to other churches and we experience something as awesome worship. I've done that myself, gone on my phone, and you turn back and you snap a picture of you and your family with the guy on the guitar on the stage, and you put something like there, hashtag worship to die for. And if you are really cool, you don't spell it out, right? On Instagram, you put something like hashtag W2DF, worship to die for. You mean you don't do that? You see, often, you see, we have this experience in which we think this is just awesome worship, but I wonder if we ever stop to define what is worship. What is worship? Before I think we can come to any conclusions about worship being awesome over here and worship to be dying for over there, we have to ask a few questions. What is worship? Who defines good and bad worship? Who decides what type of worship is acceptable and unacceptable? And who decides what type of worship is truly amazing and awesome? I think before we can have any opinions about worship, we first must define who we worship. And I think that's exactly what John 4:24 does for us. There are three parts to this verse. The first part is about who God is. The second part is what is worship. And the third part is how to worship. I think worship has for too long been too narrowly defined as merely an emotional experience when singing and hearing the music. But many years ago, the great Puritan Thomas Watson said, "Worship does not stand in church music or the melody of the organ, but rather in making melody in the heart." It is an experience that happens within the heart, not just an experience that happens within the ears. I think Watson does have a point here, because I think for too long we have hopelessly reduced worship to merely something that has to do with songs that invoke some emotional experience. You see, often we have this experience in the singing and in the band and in the lights and whatever you have, and it invigorates us emotionally and physically, but we walk out there lethargic and famished at a spiritual level. You see, our problem is that we are human beings and we tend to appraise things merely at a physical level, not at a spiritual level. And this is the context of John 4:24, where Jesus engages the Samaritan, and she has a hopelessly distorted view of worship because her sense of worship is physically appraised. Appraised in terms of the place and the posture and the liturgy and the ceremony. For too long, the Samaritans have missed the mark of true worship by a mile. They indeed, like their counterparts, the Pharisees, were indeed worshiping, but as Jesus said in Matthew 15, verse 9, but in vain do they worship me. The people worship me with their lips, but their hearts are far away. So in vain do they worship me. Jesus will not leave the Samaritan woman without knowing what true worship is. Worship of the true and living God is a matter that is based on three essential concepts. The first concept of true worship is who God is. Number two, what is worship? And number three, how to worship. These are the three questions that I think John 4:24 invites. Before we can even talk about worship and our worship experiences, we first have to ask, who is God? Second question, what is worship? And third question, how is worship done? We want to worship rightly, we want to worship the right God, and we want to experience good worship. And as John Piper says, right worship, good worship, pleasing worship depends on a right mental grasp of the way God really is. Now let's answer, or attempt to answer, this very first question, who is God? And the answer is in your verse. Verse 24. Who is God? What is God? God is spirit. That's what verse 24 says, right? God is spirit. Now what does that mean? What does it mean that God is spirit? It means that we can't make an image or a drawing or some resemblance of who God is because God is spirit. And you can't see a spirit. As John says, God is invisible. Meaning too, practically, if we don't know how God looks, we can't decide how to worship Him, and we wouldn't know how to go about to worship Him. Of course, if He tells us how to worship, then we will know. You see, since God is spirit, He is infinite. He has no boundaries. He cannot be contained in a room, and His dimensions cannot be measured. You cannot put God on a scale and say He's so many pounds and He is this tall, because He is spirit. And because God is spirit, we can know God, but we cannot know Him exhaustively because He is infinite. We will not fully conceive God without Him revealing Himself to us. And if He does not reveal Himself to us, we will not know how to worship Him. And since we don't know how He wants to be worshipped, we cannot be the judge of what is good or not so good worship without God revealing that to us. Now, when it says that God is spirit, it means that God is an infinite spirit. He is of a spiritual essence. And if we worship Him, we must conceive of Him and worship in terms of His infinite spiritual essence. But you see, we often tend to worship God in terms, or attempt to worship Him, in terms of our own limitations, our own finiteness, and so we bring our imagination to the matter. You see, God is spirit, meaning that it's like the air that we breathe. We can't see the oxygen. We can't contain and bind all the oxygen that's in the air. And yet we know that if we breathe the air, there's oxygen that gives life. And we also know when a fire breaks out, that it's the oxygen that fuels the fire. In a likewise way, we have to consider what God as Spirit reveals to us in terms of what we can understand. And once we understand the nature and the character of God, we can better understand how to worship Him. Though He is Spirit, God communicates His attributes to us. There is what theologians call the incommunicable attributes of God, the attributes that we cannot fully conceive, but we just receive them in faith, like omniscience and omnipotence. And omnipresence, we can embrace it and understand it in faith, but none of us knows what it means to be omniscient or omnipotent. But God also communicates His attributes to us that we can understand. Holiness, love, justice, grace, and truth. And these things we can relate with. You see, God reveals Himself to Moses in Exodus 34:6 in a way that Moses can relate with them. He says, "Then the Lord passed in front of him and proclaimed, 'The Lord, the Lord God, compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in loving kindness and truth.'" That is how God reveals Himself to Moses. Worship, most importantly, then, is about rightly and accurately conceiving of God's true essence and His true nature. And we would not know about His essence or His nature unless He reveals that to us, because God is Spirit. Like the Cherenkov effect, when the human spirit, the regenerated human spirit, discovers this infinite God, as this infinite God is being systematically revealed to us, there is something that begins to glow within us, something that begins to reverberate in us. It begins within the human spirit, and it will begin there and slowly manifest itself on the outside through things like awe, praise, and joy. Because it says there, he who worships God must worship Him in accordance to His essence, which is spiritual. And this, my dear brothers and sisters, is where worship begins. It begins in the spirit and it flows out to the physical. But we think that it begins with the physical and then goes to the inside. And there was this wise old Anglican bishop of a century or two ago, and he had this idea of worship and worshipers, and he says it is about those who actually draw near to the Father in loving, affectionate fellowship and an appreciation of His eternal name. What is in the name of God? His entire being, as He reveals Himself to us. Worship, therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, in an experience that begins with a knowledge about God and, of course, a trust in the very name of God. As we, as people of God, begin to discover God, the natural response to that knowledge is worship. Just as the water starts glowing when it gets into the presence of radioactivity. This is what Matthew Henry so eloquently states. He says, it is easier to say what God is not, what he is. A spirit has not flesh and bones, but who knows the way of the spirit? Matthew Henry, in his interesting English, is basically saying we will not have a clue about who God is unless God reveals himself to us. Not only his essence, which is spirit, but also his nature and his character, his attributes. And so, my dear brothers and sisters, can I say this? There can be no worship of God unless there is revelation, unless there is truth, unless there is knowledge. There can be no worship, because what do you worship if God has not revealed himself to us? But there is limitations. Because God is spirit, it means that there is no boundaries, that God is infinite. Then in God's attributes, is he not infinite too? If God is love, he is what? Infinitely loving. If God is holy, then he is infinitely holy. If God is wise, he's infinitely wise and infinitely intelligent and infinitely gracious. How do we wrap our minds around that and worship God in accordance to his nature and essence? Because this is what our verse says. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in a way that is consistent with his character and his nature, which is spiritual. So that goes without saying that if we want to worship God, we need to meet him where? In the spiritual. Okay. This is difficult, but bear with me for a moment or two. God is spirit, and he who worship him must worship him in accordance to his essence that is spiritual, and that his nature is spiritual, but we can know him. I remember many years ago, I had a dentist as a client, Dr. Anish Khatri. He was a young dentist, and I was often invited into his office to sell him stuff. And he had this little idol on his shelf. It was actually quite amazing. And every time I went in there and I looked at this little elephant creature with a human body, and he had an apple there. But always when I walked in there, the apple was kind of shriveled up. And I looked at this and I'm like, I wanted to ask the doctor, does he ever take a bite? Does he ever appreciate the apple that you give him? You see, it sounds very silly, but this is what we do. We come to God and we say, I want to offer you this as worship. And God says, this is not in accordance to my nature and essence. You take it back. This is unprofitable. Yeah, but God, I want to do it this way, this way. I'm going to sing. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. to worship you. God says, no, I reject this. You can keep that worship and it will rot there on the shelf. Because you've made me into an idol. You have made me into something that you think you can put in a box or put on a pedestal and worship the way you think I should be worshiped. But let me remind you, dear brothers and sisters, we must focus on the spiritual nature of God and worship Him accordingly. As one commentator says, God is infinite and this cannot be bound to any place or any program. Now that I've given you a little foretaste of who God is, and that is merely an introduction, we need to ask, what is worship? What is worship? Here's a definition, and this is my definition. Worship, I believe, is to be defined generally as the human spirit's response of awe and amazement about the truth of God. Worship is the human response to the knowledge of God. This is what the late Dr. J. Packer said, and I think he is right. He says, worship is a joyful and a delightful response to the knowledge of God. My children would watch Disney's when they were little, and they watched Toy Story and all these princess movies. But when we went finally to Disneyland and they saw those creatures in the flesh, they broke out with awe and amazement when they came near to Princess Ariel. And they finally met Buzz Lightyear in person. Whenever you make your way, I know you're some of you who like Disney. Listen to the little kids. Whoa! Oh! When the fireworks display, even the adults go, whoa! Right?
Been there. Guilty.
Guilty. Now tell me, dear brothers and sisters, is that how we respond when we learn of who God is? Here is a God that we should not know and we cannot know because He is Spirit, but He chooses to reveal Himself in a way that we can hold on to. Grace. I am a God that is gracious and loving and kind and slow to anger. And our response should be what? Whoa! We'll get to that part, Tony. We'll get to that part. Whoa! Stephen Charnock is a Puritan, and he wrote a lot of stuff on worship. Very amazingly, he says, worship is an act of the understanding, applying itself to the knowledge and the excellencies of God. Wow. Worship is something that we come to an understanding about the excellencies and the majesty of God. And so knowledge and truth is at the essence of worship. And knowledge and truth about who? About God. And as John Owen has said, that worship is access to the Father through the Son by the Spirit. Worship is access and communion with the Father through the Son and through the Spirit. And what did the Son and the Father do for us? They give us access to the Father. And what is Jesus called? Jesus is called the truth, the way, and the life. And the Spirit of God is called the Spirit of Truth. Each one, the Spirit and the Son, reveals the Father to us. They reveal the truth to us. And the truth they reveal to us is what our understanding of God should be, and it, in response to that truth, is worship. We cannot but worship. When Christians, when the regenerate spirit comes in nearness to God because of the knowledge and understanding of God, the following happens: awe, adoration, praise, thanksgiving, contrition, submission, repentance, remorse, sorrow, gladness, fear, singing, admiration. All these can be summed up as worshipful responses. It is a normal and natural result of the truth that is excited by the nearness of God. Now, how do we come near with God? How do we get near to God? Well, let me ask this. How do you get near to your spouse? How do you grow in your intimacy with your spouse or with a friend? You get to know them. Let me just say this. If somebody is not interested in you and to get to know you better, they have no desire to be near you or have intimacy in fellowship with you. But if somebody takes the time and says, where did you grow up? What school did you go to? How long have you lived here? What do you like to eat and drink? They have the desire to be what? Near you. They want to get to know you. And so, my dear brothers and sisters, how do we get near to God? How do we get close to God in fellowship? We look in the Word. Because that reveals to us who God is. You see, in the realm of the regenerated spirit, where Christ dwells in the heart of a redeemed sinner, something reverberates within the soul and begins to glow and reacts to the knowledge of God. As one author said, worship is the activity within the spirit whereby the soul adores and reveres his majesty, is ravished with God's amiableness, embraces his goodness, enters itself into an intimate communion with the most lovely object, and focuses all affections upon him. I mean, who speaks like that today? But is there something to be said about being absolutely consumed by who God is? Can you see, my dear brothers and sisters, if we focus on the external adoration of the praises that comes through our mouth, that is not going to go from the mouth in to the spirit. It's where the human spirit, the regenerated spirit, meets the truth and knowledge about God, and what comes out is praise and adoration from the mouth. For John 4:24 says, they must worship. How? In spirit and in truth. When we think about this, Remember when Jesus, when he was resurrected, was walking with strangers on the road to Emmaus? In Luke 24:32, and he explained the truth to them. And what was their response afterwards? They said to each other, "Did our hearts not burn within when he explained the scriptures to us?" When that burning, that glowing begins in the heart, it flows out through the mouth and through the hands. And that is what it means to worship God in spirit and truth. It is a spiritual result that manifests in the physical realm. It is not the other way around. And my dear brothers and sisters, how is it that when the truth about God is explained, and God is explained through the scriptures, that people are not warmed in their hearts? There is no burning within. If you have ever the privilege to walk into a nuclear reactor plant, and they have the reactor there in the water, and you go, "Why is the water not glowing?" Then they would say to you, "This is a decommissioned plant. There is no radioactivity." And then you say, "I knew it, because my pastor told me about the Cherenkov effect." Right? And so when the truth about who God is explained, or you read it and there is no warming in the heart, there is something missing. The reactor is decommissioned, or the heart is still dead and its trespasses and sin.